Welcome to The Fourth Question, a special edition of the Big Three podcast. Sometimes we come across a topic, an idea, or a question that is too big for the Big Three. Sometimes the answers aren't as clear-cut as we'd like them to be, and we need to give the time and space to really dig deep. That's why we have The Fourth Question. Because no question is too big when it comes to diving deeper into God's invitation for us all. And today, we're talking about a topic that we're all aware of, but probably equally uncertain about, and that's COVID-19. More specifically, a faith response to the pandemic and the current restrictions and what it all means for the future of the church. So joining me for the fourth question today is the Reverend Dr. Mark Rader.
Yes, I am the Reverend Doctor.
You are the Reverend Doctor.
We're talking about a pandemic. I'm not that kind of doctor.
I did feel like that was a good segue to my caveat of we will not be discussing medicine or science when it comes to COVID-19. You are not that kind of doctor.
I am not.
But you've got some credibility, I guess we could say, about talking about faith and scripture.
I'm more that kind of doctor than I am the medical scientific type.
Then you are the right guy to have on the fourth question today. So, Mark, coincidentally, this is the fourth question, and yet I've got three questions for you.
Three parts to the fourth question.
Yeah, three parts to this discussion because, you know, man, we're 18 months into this experience. And although we might have wrapped our heads around some things, we've got new challenges coming left, right, and center. And I think there's significance and there's need to have a moment where we just kind of pause and just kind of go, okay, I've heard a lot of things. There's a lot of ideas, a lot of arguments, a lot of opinions out there. Can we just take a moment to pause and consider them? And, you know, I guess hear your take on some of these ideas to kind of what I hope to provide for those listening is, I guess, a sounding board, a helpful kind of calm space to kind of hear our take as GBC on the pandemic.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you know, before we get into the three parts of the one
question
or whatever, I think it is worth acknowledging that it's pretty complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I think the sheer amount of information out there, some from good sources, some from perhaps some questionable sources.
Yeah, yeah.
Some stuff that's just completely and utterly made up, like, and trying to sift all that makes this a really complicated issue. And then, of course, there's the layered, like the relationship layer on top of that.
Yeah.
Whereas we might work with people who, you know, are anti-vaccinations entirely, like across the board, some who might be, you know, what they call vaccine hesitant.
Yep.
Some who might be vaccine hesitant for medical reasons.
Yep.
Some who might be because they see it's, you know, an infringement of freedoms or like the permutations
there's
of
a
the
spectrum,
discussion.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think for many believers, and part of the reason why we're doing this is that I think some of what we're hearing from people is there's just so many voices.
Yeah.
There are so many permutations. Mm. There's so many spots where you can fall. Like, what do we do with some with some of this? And I think it is worth acknowledging. Mm. If this were really simple, if this were one of those, you know, grass is green, sky is blue, we wouldn't be doing a podcast.
Yeah.
Right? Like we do choose things that do have some confusion to them. And even if, you know, if you're listening and you think of this as a very black and white issue, like you found your position and like that's it, I'm done.
Yep.
Done thinking
this
about it.
This is where I stand. Yeah.
You know, very, you know, kind of, shall I say, a simple view, not in the sense that you're, those who have a black and white view are simplistic, but, you know, just I've come to my conclusions. I know what I believe. I'm just going at it. I think it's worth acknowledging that this is quite a complex
absolutely.
Situation in the sense of the amount of information out there.
And there are so many different experiences of the complexity. Like I know for myself and, you know, you've already mentioned vaccinations and I have no doubt that we're going to get into that a bit further in the podcast. But I know for myself, like that whole sense of, you know, the variety of opinions, I fell down a rabbit hole when it came to vaccinations, like, and it kind of messed with my head, and I just didn't know where to look and what to trust and what to think, and it got overwhelming. And so I really hope that this can be a conversation that helps people kind of I guess, sift through that overwhelming murkiness that is coming about and kind of give some clarity.
At least in a few areas.
At least in a few areas.
You want good vaccination rates and models and all that stuff, you need to listen to something else.
I'm not here for the statistics.
Right. Well, and, you know, and it's probably worth saying, if you've got medical questions, you need to speak to your GP.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, speak to someone who actually knows what they're talking about.
Who's a real doctor.
Who's a real doctor. I'm a real doctor.
Not a reverend doctor.
I'm just not that kind of real doctor. And I think that is worth stating. I think that, you know, one of the challenges in our day and age, you know, they talk about this being the post-truth era, you know, where, and social media just fuels that because, you know, in a post-truth world, what feels true
is true.
Is true
for me.
Yeah, and I noticed that in my own reaction to things. Like, you know, you'll be scrolling through Facebook or whatever, and you'll see a headline, and you want it to be true. You know, like somebody that you don't like is, you know, something bad's happening. You're like, oh, and I catch myself going, wait a minute, is that actually true, or have I just been kind of grabbed by what I want to be true.
Yeah.
And I think social media can end up reinforcing, you know, people talk about echo chambers and echo bubbles and all those sorts of things. That's really true. Mm. So if you're looking for, you know, medical advice or information on vaccinations and those sorts of things, you do really need to see a GP. You need to talk to medical professionals because they're the people who know and understand. And while there is a sense that we are, you know, experiencing this pandemic and the development of a vaccination and the vaccine rollout kind of in very much in real time.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid and I got my vaccinations, I hadn't experienced the pandemic components of them. I hadn't really experienced the development of them. I just happened to get one. You know, I lined up as a kid and got my shot and off I went. You know, so,
'cause mom and dad said.
Yeah. So there is a sense that, you know, the whole community is learning, including the medical community, but they're still the best people to be able to figure stuff out and spot trends and to identify what's important. 'Cause I think that's the other thing with, you know, the enormous amounts of information. You know, wisdom is not information. If wisdom were associated with information, we would be the wisest society that has ever lived.
Yeah.
The reality is you have to be able to figure out which information is important.
Yeah.
I don't think we're particularly wise in that space. And so I think we need to make sure that we're not relying on somebody on Instagram or Facebook, but instead speaking to and accessing people who you know, who have the expertise to bring some wisdom to the information and discern the patterns and those sorts of things. But probably that's enough disclaimers. Is there anything left for us to say?
With that being said, you know, we want the fourth question today to be a conversation around faith and how it intersects with our experience of COVID-19 at the moment and the restrictions and the vaccinations and everything that, as you say, is happening around us in real time. So, you know, with that being said, let's get into it. I think my first question is, you know, I still have kind of in my mind the groups of people who rallied in the city. And I remember seeing a sign that said, "Faith, not fear." And since then, it's a statement that I've heard a number of times from a number of sources. And it seems to be one that, is gaining traction. And I think is something that I'm interested in. I have no doubt that there are people out there who are interested in it. So, you know, what are we to make of the argument circulating from many Christian communities and even political parties that we should have faith, not fear?
I talked, you know, I said just a moment ago that, you know, wisdom is not in the amount of information, but in being able to spot what's taking place. Another feature of wisdom is proverbial wisdom, right? And proverbial wisdom, you know, the short little pithy statements of generalized truth that we apply to our lives.
Yeah.
And to some degree, faith versus fear strikes me as a little bit like a proverb.
Yeah.
Broadly speaking, I would agree with that, right? Like, I think, you know, if you said to me, do you want your life to be characterized by faith or do you want it to be characterized by fear?
Yeah.
I think the choice
seems like a no-brainer.
It seems like a bit of a no-brainer. Yeah. But the thing about Proverbs is that because they're so short and generalized, you can have Proverbs that seem contradictory, right? Which is where, again, wisdom is not just about knowing the proverbs, it's about being able to apply them.
Yeah.
Right? So, what's the famous example in scripture? There's one, I can't remember which chapter it is in Proverbs, but in two consecutive verses, it basically says, answer a fool according to his folly, right? Or else he'll think he's wise. And the very next verse, or vice versa, depending on which one goes, don't answer a fool according to his folly, or you'll just lower yourself to his level.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, so which is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And obviously it's a matter of timing. Mm. And so I think when we're talking about faith versus fear, and not that it's necessarily a proverb, it's probably some other word for it, an idiom or something or other, an axiom maybe, I don't know. I'm out of my depth already.
Not the point.
I'm not that kind of doctor. But there's something about it where you kind of go, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And if I wanted my life to be characterized by one of those two things, it would certainly be faith.
Mm.
But in the specific context in which we find ourselves, I'm not convinced that it's the most useful saying.
Yeah.
Right? Because what it suggests is, and this is part of the politicizing of it, right? Mm. And so we need to acknowledge that. Part of the package that has is that if you go along with lockdowns, if you get a vaccination, right, that you are somehow giving in to fear rather than faith.
Mm.
And that feels a little bit untenable for me. It kind of feels unfair to kind of go, you mean that I have to either choose faith or a vaccination? It feels a bit like that whole science versus faith debate, right? Like, I can't be both. I can't.
Yeah, it's an either or.
Yeah, and so it does make it very either or. And I think it's where, as we all know, our lives are fully like not either or.
Yeah.
like when I think about my life in relationship to faith and fear, there are probably some areas where I'm perhaps more faith than fear.
Mm.
And there are some areas I'm more fear than faith.
Mm.
And in most cases, it is a little bit of both.
Mm.
So you mentioned that you were a little bit, uncertain about getting the vaccine.
Yep.
A little bit anxious about it, a little bit fearful about it.
Yes, sir. Yes, I was.
And I think that's normal, right? Mm. And, you did some thinking about it, fell down a rabbit hole, thought to yourself, you know what?
And what a journey.
I'm not that kind of doctor.
No, I did think that.
Went to your doctor.
I actually had a friend say, you're not that kind of doctor. In fact, Matt Willis, you're not any kind of doctor. Go talk to your GP.
And so you did and got the jab.
Yes, I did.
And I think that's a lot of our journey.
Yeah.
Right? You're trying to figure that stuff out as you go. So I'm not sure that the dichotomy is very helpful for us, because then it paints people, which is very typical of our social media age, it paints people as one or the other, black or white.
Mm.
Like there's no middle ground. And in reality, most of us find that there's a little bit of both.
Mm.
I also don't know that I agree, I guess, fundamentally with the idea that with the identification or the definition of faith in those sorts of posters, those protest signs, that a lockdown is an expression of my lack of faith in God.
Mm.
Like, I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't, again, that doesn't feel, it doesn't feel like it adequately describes the situation. In many ways, to some degree, my response personally to the lockdowns has not really been a matter of faith much at all.
Mm.
The government has said, this is what we're trying to do for public health. And I've gone, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't pray about it. I didn't sit there and go, I wonder if I should.
Mm.
It's like, this is what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm gonna do that. And I think to some degree, and we'll probably circle around these ideas a little bit over the course of this podcast. To some degree, when I have thought about it from the perspective of faith, it's been the matter of, well, I need to be looking out for people around me, and I need to be, as a Christian, I need to be trustworthy in my community.
Yep.
I think one of the challenges that the church faces right now is a lack of trust in the institution of the church.
Yeah.
This seems to be a way to, at the very least, not draw more negative publicity to ourselves by contravening a public health order.
Yeah.
Is kind of how I've approached it. But I haven't kind of sat there and thought to myself, my faith in Jesus is being tested by whether or not I should get the vaccine or whether I should be cranky about lockdown or it seems to me to be a different kind of question.
Mm. And it seems like even like the other side of this, faith, not fear argument is that actually, like, what is occurring in our society at the moment is an opportunity for us to live out our faith in a really profound way, which is, I guess, what you're trying to say. Like, you know, within lockdown, there is an opportunity for us to be Christ to those who are fearful. And the reality is, I'm sorry, a lot of us are. Like, there are definitely moments where I have concern. I've got three kids. They're too young to be vaccinated. What does that mean for them? Yeah. Like, I worry for them. And, of course, there's fear in that. Yeah. And we've had some amazing, you know, people of faith rally around us in that in that space and support us in that space and love us in that space. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I also think that perhaps the characteristic that we really want is not so much faith versus fear, but courage. Because courage is the ability to act in the face of fear.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a matter of saying, I have no fear. Right, which seems to be some of the bravado of that statement, right?
Yeah, you know, that, like, my faith kind of transcends above and what's happening now.
Exactly. Whereas courage is about saying, got to figure this out, right? Are the things that make me anxious? Yeah, there are. Are the things I'm worried about? Yeah. Should I bring them to the Lord and you know, and ask for the peace that passes understanding? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Should I also act with courage? Yeah. You know, and I don't think we ever really act in the absence of fear. And courage, of course, is not the absence of fear. If you're not fearful, then you're not being courageous when you do something. You're just being fearless.
Yeah.
There is a difference in that space, which I think is also fairly important. You know, I think some of the other signs you see at those sort of protests, you know, like the God is my vaccine piece. Again, kind of posits it in the same sort of way, that somehow getting a vaccine is undermining any
the work
sense
of God.
Well, any sense of faith in God. Like, if you get the vaccine, you're not trusting God. I'm like, oh boy. Again, long bow, I think, to draw. Now, you've got to fit it on a protest poster, right? A densely
worded, it's going to be pithy.
Like, a densely worded argument about why you're not not for vaccinations and how it relates to your faith doesn't kind of fit on a placard, right? So it's a little bit difficult. And so I don't want to, you know, kind of it's unfair to apply, like, the rigor that you would apply to a book to a placard is kind of what I'm getting at. But the kind of the feeling behind it, and so much of our society is reduced to headlines and placard shouting, really. That idea that God will just protect me, the way of wisdom seems to be that, you know, we need to trust the Lord, certainly. And again, it's not a matter of saying, oh, I'm just going to trust science. I'm not going to trust God.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I think I have quite a general view of wisdom. So I believe that wisdom is the discerning of the patterns that God has built into the world.
Yeah.
Both material and moral. You know, so honesty is the best policy, not because of any other reason than the fact that God built it into the universe.
Yeah.
And whether you're a believer or not, I think you can figure it out. You kind of go, you know what? If I don't lie all the time, I don't tend to get in so much trouble.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be a Christian to figure that thing out.
Yeah, and to value it.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, say in the medical world, you know, well, obviously we can't solve everything. There do seem to be some patterns that God has built in. And they've discerned them. And, you know, when you wear a mask and you get vaccinated, it seems that these are the effects and the outcomes.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's, you know, still trusting in God's world and the wonder of how God made the world and kind of following what other people have kind of discerned about how our world works. And so I think that, again, we just want to be careful about drawing too stark a contrast.
Yeah.
You know, it's faith or fear. It's trusting God or getting a vaccine. It's like, oh, like on those choices, not really keen on fear. I'm not really keen on getting a vaccination. Then,
yeah.
Right? If that's my choice.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I don't think that those are our choices.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've been double vaccinated. Well, I guess 4/5 of my family have at this point, you know. And I feel that that's not at all in contradiction to my faith. I think that when we recognize that those two things are not necessarily the only two options on the spectrum, it allows us a little bit more space to move.
I think that's really helpful and kind of is a good lead in and kind of a good foundation discussion to what I want to talk about next, because there have been like further kind of Christian responses to some of the restrictions that we're experiencing, mm-hmm. particularly the use of masks and obviously the vaccination rollout. Mm-hmm. And it's resulted in a perception of what these things mean from a biblical perspective,
yeah.
Which is kind of like almost a step or two down from like further than the faith versus fear kind of conversation. So here's my question. I hope it makes sense. But, you know, there have been some to relate the current restrictions regarding wearing of masks and the push for vaccinations with scripture that speaks of the end times, specifically with the mark of the beast in Revelations 13, 15 to 18. Mm-hmm. What's your understanding of this text and its relationship with what we're experiencing in COVID-19?
Well, now see, this is the kind of doctor that I am.
This is the kind of doctor, and you know, which is why I'm asking you and not my GP.
You've come to me with the right symptoms. I mean, this isn't a sermon, so I'll have to be careful of that. But
you can see where this stems from the fear thing, because I think that it's almost fear of going against God in this sense when we start looking at end times and Revelation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the more explicitly Christian,
yes,
shall we say, component of it, because you don't have to be a believer to have kind of a fear versus faith mentality, even if it's not faith
in God.
That's the piece. There's that whole, you know, the opposition to lockdowns and whatnot is not a faith-based thing, certainly. In terms of the, where do you start with Revelation?
No, I ask the questions.
I know. That was more rhetorical. But the text in question is obviously kind of not in the exact middle, but in the middle of the book of Revelation, which is apocalyptic. And I think one of the most important things to recognize about apocalyptic literature in terms of like it's the why behind the genre. You're probably familiar with Marshall McLuhan's statement that the medium is the message, right? And so the medium isn't just something, it's actually shapes the way we communicate. So a text message is different than an essay. And it's not just because one has more words than the other, it's the medium itself. And so when you talk about the kind of genre or literary type, that actually contains some of the meaning. And apocalyptic literature is generally written to groups of people who are experiencing hardship and opposition and oppression. So in that sense, any time that a group or an individual feels oppressed, marginalized, ostracized, whatever the case might be, they'll find a ready friend in apocalyptic literature.
Yeah.
But the primary kind of emphasis and focus of apocalyptic literature is to encourage people who have been faithful to remain faithful. And so the descriptions of the end being really close at hand are meant to encourage people not to give up when we're so close to the finish line, right? Yep. Essentially, what apocalyptic literature is saying is you're tired of the race, you're thinking about just bailing, but trust me, it's just around the next corner and there's the finish line. So you'd feel like a bit of an idiot if you dropped out now, walked to the end of the street and realized you were 55 meters away from it.
Yeah.
Like, so don't give in now. Don't give in now. And there's a number of strategies that they use to encourage that are kind of typical of apocalyptic literature. One is that they focus on the sovereignty of God.
Yep.
So the idea that God is totally in control and has revealed the end, right?
Yep.
So you know that this is how it's going to play out, and there's some certainty in that. That's one strategy. But again, the importance of the predictions of the end is not so that people can kind of go, oh, I know what's happening next.
Yeah.
It's so that they go, okay, I can hold on.
Yeah.
I can hold on. That's really critical. Another strategy that they tend to use is they try to show the real picture, like what's really happening. And the beasts in Revelation 13 are a way of showing what's really happening. So most of the vision that John has in Revelation takes place in heaven. Right, so the seven letters to the seven churches are dictated while he's kind of on the island of Patmos, and then he's taken up to heaven. And so everything he sees is from the perspective of heaven. Mm. And again, for a group of people that he's writing to who are experiencing persecution and opposition and the temptation to compromise in particular, when you're tempted to compromise, you look for the gray, right? You look for the gray,
yeah.
Right? And from the perspective of heaven, there is no gray.
Yeah.
You're either sealed for the lamb or marked for the beast. Mm. Like that's it. Those are your only options. And again, that's a mechanism of helping people persevere.
Yeah.
Right? So you like, don't quit. Mm. A, the end is just around the corner. And B, like there's no neutral here.
Yeah, yeah. There's no middle ground.
Yeah, don't. And then they depict these beasts and there's, I mean, while they're terrifying in their detail, the issue that I think what John is trying to do is to demonstrate the ultimate impotence of these beasts. So you have at the start of chapter 13, you have the dragon, who's been cast down from heaven, who tried to catch the woman in chapter 12 and couldn't. Mm. And he's really cranky about it. So he's already defeated. He's kind of twice defeated. And he's the one, this defeated dragon,
yeah,
who stands behind these beasts that come out of the earth and out of the sea. Mm. So right off the bat, there's this sense that we are supposed to see that the might that we are facing is not nearly as impressive as it wants us to believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then the first beast, it has the seven heads, one of which is slain but has come back to life, which is a parody of the lamb who has been slain, right? Yeah. So there's a whole bunch of stuff in here where the author's kind of going, this is just a really bad copy of what's really happening.
Yeah.
You know, you want to trust in someone who's died and come back to life? It's not the seventh head of the beast.
Yeah.
It's the lamb. Mm. You want to know the real authority? It ain't the dragon. It's the one who sits on the throne and lives forever and ever and threw him down from heaven and then protected the one that the dragon was like, it's that kind of image.
Yeah.
So when you get to the language of the number, the mark of the beast in chapter 13, right? It says the second beast. So again, another beast comes forth. It was given power. And again, the sovereignty of God is hidden here, but it's there. Because who gives and takes authority and power in the book of Revelation? It's only ever God.
Mm.
Right? So this is part of the whole, you can trust what's happening.
Yeah.
The beast is given the authority and to be taken away.
Yeah.
So he has authority, but it's been given to him by God.
Yeah.
So don't get too carried away. Right?
Yeah.
Like as soon as God wants to, he'll take it away, like taking candy from a baby.
Yeah.
Like no problems asked, right? No problem. To give breath to the image of the first beast so that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hands or on their foreheads so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. And it's important, again, just before I get to the actual number, to realize the importance of economics in Revelation.
Mm.
So if you read chapter, I think it's 18 and 19, with the fall of Babylon, which is the symbol for Rome, the ones who mourn the fall of Babylon mourn the loss of wealth.
Yeah.
There's economic language in the seven letters to the seven churches.
Yeah.
Which seems to suggest that part of what the Christians were experiencing, part of the reason why they were being tempted to compromise was because of economic pressure, right? Even the city that comes down from heaven, it's an economic image.
Yeah.
It's a city made of gold, right? Or like the streets are made of gold. Like you don't normally pave with gold because it's too precious. You pave with stuff that you got buckets of.
Yeah.
And that's cheap. So gold is so cheap in heaven that we just pave with it. Like we can think of nothing better to do with it. We found these giant pearls, we made them into gates. Like what else do you do with giant pearls? We have so many already. Like there's a real sense of don't trust in Rome or any economic system. And I think that that's a really important distinction between, say, our current situation with COVID-19 and this. It's the economic impact.
Mm.
And I think that that's the source of the opposition. But then it says in the final verse in that section, this calls for wisdom. And I think that's really important, right? Really important. Let the person who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it's the number of a man. That number is 666. And the problem with numerology is that it's hard to go from a number to a name. Right? Like numerology assigns numbers to successive letters of the alphabet.
Yeah.
So if I know that your name is Matt, I can work out the number of your name, right? I add up the letter M and the A and the T and the T, and there we go. I've got your number. If you just give me a number, It could be
any mix of things.
It could be any mix of things. Yep. So it's really hard to kind of figure it all out. But I think there's something in the sixes, right? And the fact that they are one less seven and there's three of them.
Mm.
Because the description has just been of these three beasts, right? A twice defeated dragon, a beast who's just copying the lamb, and we know how that's going to end, and another beast who's been given this authority and it's going to be taken away.
Yeah.
In all three cases, it's like not quite God, not quite God, not quite God.
Yeah.
Like why would you worship a twice defeated beast? Why in the world would you just follow a parody of the lamb? Why in the world would you allow someone who's been given authority, but from whom that authority will be taken to determine your life? And so I think the 666 is less about identifying a particular person and more about kind of making fun of those three creatures.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, so close, oh, so close, oh, so close. Like,
epic fail.
Yeah. You're a 6 out of 7. Like, you're really close and you almost fooled me. In fact, most of the world is fooled. But those who have wisdom, who have insight, see behind the facade and go, it's a twice defeated dragon.
Yeah.
It's a parody of the lamb. Like, this is not the real authority. I need to be loyal to the, shall I say, the 777.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that that's a really quite important piece. So I think that's what's going on in Revelation. So when it comes to specific applications for us, I think we have to be careful about where we apply it. I don't think we should apply this idea of the mark of the beast just to anything that might mark people, right? I think when we think about masks or vaccinations, you know, I know that there's talk about vaccine passports, but that's not going to stop you buying stuff. It's going to stop you gathering in large groups. So there's an economic, but not really an economic. It's also not directed at people of faith, right? Again, you know, like, theoretically, moving forward, particularly early in the piece, a Christian, a Muslim, a Buddhist, and an atheist, all of whom are not vaccinated for whatever reasons, will all be in the same boat.
Yeah.
So it's not a direct parallel to what we encounter in the book of Revelation. And I think that, you know, some of those, some of those interpretations that suggest that, you know, we can identify what the mark is, I think kind of misses the point that John's getting at. He's seeing this from the perspective of heaven.
Yeah.
Right? Let me put it this way. If a dragon stood at Cronulla Beach and a seven-headed beast came out of the ocean and took up station in Sutherland and had seven heads, like okay, that's a literal fulfillment.
Yeah.
The reality is that John is, from the perspective of heaven, again, showing to his readers that there isn't the ambiguity that they think there is.
Yeah.
It's far more black and white. And so for his audience, loyalty to Rome had economic implications.
Yeah.
And there were religious loyalty was what was required.
Yeah.
There are inscriptions about Augustus Caesar that basically sound awfully familiar to Mark chapter 1, where Caesar Augustus was given to the world, and his birth is good news for the world because he brings peace and there's no gift that's greater than, like, it's remarkable. And so to offer incense to the emperors was not just polite society. It was making religious claims. You don't do that. It's hard to be part of a guild.
Yeah.
If you're not part of a guild, it's hard to get work. If you don't like.
Yeah.
So I think that the circumstances are very, very different. And I don't know if that's too long of an answer or not nearly long enough. Like, here's the summary.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Here's the summary.
I'm here for it.
Are masks or the vaccine the mark of the beast according to Revelation 13? Short answer is no. Long answer is kind of more no. But I think that we want to be paying attention to things that call us, that tempt us into stepping away from faithfulness to God.
Yeah.
Which is, again, where you see that faith versus fear dynamic at work. Because if I look at the world in black and white terms, if I kind of go, oh, it's either faith or fear, and if I then see that the mark of fear is getting the vaccine or wearing a mask or staying in lockdown, then I can be led to believe that.
Yeah.
And so they all do tie together. So they're fairly complicated.
Yeah. Complicated they are. But I've actually never had a better understanding of Revelation. So I do appreciate that. And I think that is helpful. That's been a really helpful conversation. Cause I know, you know, whether or not for some people it's gone down into the details of scripture and specifically Revelations or more that 30,000 foot view of it's either faith or fear, it's black and white. I think that's a helpful kind of unpacking of actually, like, it is more complicated, it is more nuanced. Yeah. And it's not one or the other. Because I think you're absolutely right. You said this a couple of times earlier on. If you had the choice of faith versus fear, if you had a choice of the sovereign lamb or the beast, you're choosing the former, not the latter.
Yep.
But that is not our circumstance as we see it in COVID.
Yeah, and I think that is a fairly important piece. But I mean, again, I think it's helpful for those of you who are listening to recognize that, you know, because our society makes things black and white, that black and white rendering from the perspective of heaven does seem to have some resonance.
Yeah,
and that's where it kind of gets really tricky for us. But I don't see this as a matter of religious liberty.
Yeah.
I think that those are different matters altogether.
Well, I'm interested that you brought that up because religious liberty and religious freedom is a topic that's come up a number of times during the COVID experience. It came up in 2020. Yep. It seems to be coming up now. There's recently been the Ezekiel Declaration that a number of church leaders have signed, kind of calling to Scott Morrison and kind of calling out, I guess, five key arguments, I guess is the best way to put it. And this also kind of ties into the vaccination passport and that certain restrictions will only be eased for those who are double vaxxed and not others. Yep. So I guess I've got two questions here. I had one, which would have
don't know what we're up to in terms of the three.
No. Yeah, it would have finished off my three, but now I've got like now it's more like a 3.5. I don't know
with an appendix.
I did not join. I did not join ministry to do math. Like, let's put it that way.
We are the same in that.
But I guess, you know, there are a number of different arguments regarding faith implications for receiving the COVID vaccination. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask, you know, is the choice of being vaccinated a decision of faith? But I guess what that also encapsulates for me, just as we've been talking, is, you know, are the restrictions that we're experiencing an oppression of religious liberty?
Yeah.
So I've just hit you with two at once.
Yeah, sure.
But you know, I think you can take it. So.
I mean, I think that, you know, there's the religious freedoms part, and there's, I guess, the political or like just liberties in general, kind of dissociated from religion. I think, you know, it's important again to note the context in which we live. So you know, it wasn't that long ago that we had the same-sex marriage debate.
Yep.
And the sense for many Christians that the tide of culture was turning against them or us, and that there were going to be more attempts to silence us, and how would we be able to speak what we believe to be true without, you know, all of those sorts of questions.
Yep.
And so I think that general context of anxiety kind of fed into some of what was perceived as being a little bit targeted, particularly like last year when churches tended to be kind of later in the pecking order in terms of things that could go back, organizations that could reopen. Mm-hmm. And I think it was only a perception. And there's a number of reasons for that. I mean, JobKeeper kind of went to everybody.
Yeah.
It went to churches as much as it went to restaurants
and
all of that. So I don't think it was aimed at Christians in some sort of way. I think the fact that churches did open up and, like, once they were opened up, you know, government didn't have any problems with that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's another indicator. And I also just think, I mean, personally, I think the reasons why the churches didn't open up more quickly and why the government didn't push for that is the very simple fact, and I think this is an indictment on us, that we're not particularly valuable. We don't make a bucket of money like restaurants or pubs or footy stadiums. Like, we don't do that. And so I think that, you know, our value add is kind of determined in that space.
Yeah.
At any rate, I don't believe that vaccinations or the vaccine passports are anything related to religion. And I think the reasons are that it's a medical issue rather than a scientific one. I mean, no one's talking about religion in that space. There's no talk about, you know, aiming this at Christians or at Buddhists or Muslims or any faith-based organization. I think that's fairly important for us to recognize. And I think that, you know, the implications, the potential implications for churches, it's not religious persecution. I don't know how you can hold those things together. Is it a restriction on personal freedoms?
Yeah.
I suppose it is. You know, I read through the Ezekiel Declaration kind of just before the podcast, and you know, yes, they have five arguments. I'm not convinced of them. You know, I think their first argument about why the prime minister should avoid vaccine passports is because it will create a two-tiered society, which is based solely on the premise that we haven't been told that vaccine passports will be temporary, which is really an argument from silence as far as I'm concerned, because the government, I mean, the government doesn't know, you know. They cite an Abraham Kuyper. I don't know why they went to a Dutch Reformed guy from the late 1800s, early 1900s. I wasn't sure why they went there, apart from the fact that he was apparently against smallpox vaccination certificates.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing to note is that we no longer have smallpox vaccination certificates, because it's been eradicated.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the need for vaccine passports is contextualized by the fact that there is a pandemic right now. I mean, you know, we haven't required as a church proof of vaccination for anything. Mostly because millions of people aren't dying from something right now. And so I think it's really important that we notice what I think is the hole in that argument, which is the assumption that a passport, a vaccine passport, is a permanent,
is forever
solution. In which case, you would be having some long-term questions about vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
Yeah.
But as nearly all pandemics seem to have played out, eventually it comes to the point where it's not
necessary.
It's not as necessary, right? And so it seems to me that we just have to keep in mind that our context right now, that we are in a position where, you know, our liberties are being restricted, but in reality, it's a public health measure.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to look at it. If the government had come out and said, we're going to introduce vaccine passports and they're a forever thing, and we're going to move all the unvaccinated people into ghettos. Okay, that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah, I'd raise an eyebrow.
Yeah. But that's. I think we're overreacting on that. You know, our leaders are responding to this in real time as well. And they're trying to figure out what to do, and the whole world is trying to figure out what to do. And so I think we need to kind of pay some attention to that space. I think similarly, you know, another point in the Ezekiel Declaration was that this is, you know, that it's somehow a coercion of conscience.
Yeah.
And in reality, it's not. Like, I think that's a false argument, because you don't have to get the vaccine. The government hasn't told you that you must. It's just basically said, if you're not going to get the vaccine, then there will be some
implications,
restrictions on what you can and can't do. Again, at least in the short term, like I can't imagine that in 15 years we'll still have COVID vaccine passports.
Yeah.
But I can imagine 2 years from now, 3 years from now, as the world kind of gets on top of it. So you do not have to get the vaccine. We're not coercing your conscience. You don't have to get it, but there are consequences. You don't have to get a driver's license, but if you don't get a driver's license, you can't drive a car.
Yeah.
Right? Like, again, we're not coercing you to get one. If you want to drive a car, you need to get your license.
Yeah.
This is kind of the way it works. And so I think that we do have to be careful. It does feel a little bit kind of fear-mongery, a little bit haphazard, you know, in some of its argumentation, which I found a little bit kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's probably the fairest way to say it. You know, yes, lockdowns are difficult, as their second point says, and the vaccination passport would just kind of make it immeasurable pain or whatever they say about it. And again, I'm not convinced. You know, yeah, it's hard, but it's kind of hard everywhere.
Yeah.
And in reality, in Australia, like there are, you know, I think I worry, I think many people do, for Indigenous communities.
Yeah.
Or for, you know, neighborhoods and areas that are lower socioeconomics. Mm. Yeah, but I think for the majority of Australia, you know, I'm locked down, quote unquote, in my 4-bedroom home with my backyard.
Mm.
Yeah, okay, it's a little bit boring.
Yeah.
But seriously. And again, that's not to belittle the mental health concerns that people have or the
but they
increases.
Aren't just Christian concerns, are no, they? They're societal. And
yeah.
And I don't think they are being belittled.
No, I didn't want people to take me as
no. Gosh, no. But like I think there is something to be said. I think my take of the Ezekiel declaration, because I think at first glance the points that they make, you know, they're valid points. I don't want a two-tiered society where it's an us and them mentality. I don't want my conscience to be coerced. I don't want you know, things to restrict my ability to participate in the life of the church. But I think what I see is the restrictions that are happening in real time now, in the face of a very destructive virus that has, you know, impacted our world considerably over 18 months, that those restrictions are for the good of the many.
Yep.
And it feels to me, my take on the points made by the Ezekiel Declaration is about elevating the needs of the one. And that's probably a very broad kind of take on it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we need to sacrifice certain things in order for the greater
Well, yeah,
good.
And they talk about counting the cost, you know, and is it worth the potential pain that this will cause? But again, I'm not a huge debater in that sense, but I wasn't convinced by the argument. You know, they're saying that lockdowns have a heavy toll on people. I'm like, yes, it's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then they kind of make the assumption that basically it's lockdowns and then the vaccine passport on top of that. When in reality, the vaccine passport is meant to relieve lockdowns so that the life of many will be improved.
Mm.
It's not as if we're remaining in lockdown and we get a vaccine passport.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't work. And you know, I think their last point about the gospel, you know, we don't want to restrict access to the church. And I mean, to some degree, that was the one I had the most trouble with.
Yeah.
Because it suggests that the only place where the gospel can be heard is in a church building.
Yeah, on a Sunday.
And I'm like, oh, okay, I got all sorts of issues with that. And I think this comes back to that whole religious freedoms thing. Mm. Are we still able to preach the gospel?
Yes.
Yeah, we are. And we could take the gospel to our neighborhoods.
Mm.
You know, and what better time than in a time when people are feeling anxious and uncertain and fearful? Like, we have hope. You know, yeah, I might be anxious, I might be fearful, I might be a little bit worried, but I've got hope.
Mm.
And it goes far beyond a vaccine.
Yeah.
Right, like we have eternal hope.
Yeah.
And so that whole idea of, you know, that unless people are allowed to come physically into my building, I'm not going to be able to preach the gospel. I'm like, what church is having people flood to their buildings to hear the gospel that would suddenly be shut down?
Mm.
And really, we can take the gospel to them freely.
Yeah.
Nothing's stopping us doing that. And so I think that, you know, but that language of, you know, you read it and again, your first you're like, oh yeah, man, I don't want to, you know, I don't want the gospel to restrict it. Mm. Then you stop for 5 seconds and think about it. And you think there's nothing in a vaccine passport legislation that says I can't go and speak to somebody. And, you know, there's the opportunity to serve those who are not vaccinated.
Yeah.
We still need to serve them. They still need the gospel. They still need to be discipled as followers of Jesus. We just might have to be a little bit more creative about how we do that.
And they still have a place in the community of faith.
Yeah. And again, I don't think that these will be permanent, given the fact that, you know, other vaccination certificates and passports have not been permanent either. I think the only reason that it might be permanent is if COVID is with us to stay in a like an ever mutating way where, you know, like, okay, then we've got to figure that one out. But so I'm not sure if that's answered any of the questions around religious freedoms or not.
But I feel like we've talked around it a little bit, but like to bring it back in, because there have been some discussions around vaccinations, and obviously everything's now being tethered to vaccinations. We used to be, the goal used to be zero cases, and now it's 80% vaccinations, which is, you know, it has escalated the decision-making process around, well, will I get this? And obviously there are a lot of questions around that, and some are medical and some are spiritual. So is, as you understand it, is vaccinations or the choice to be vaccinated a faith-based one?
I think there's a faith component to it.
Yep.
Again, let me reiterate what I said. I'm not that kind of doctor. So if you have vaccine hesitancy about the medicine or the science, you need to see your GP. But all things being equal, if I'm not concerned about the medical or the scientific, if I kind of go, yeah, the vaccines are out there, but will I as a Christian get vaccinated? I would argue that Christians should. And the rationale is quite simple, really. You know, while my personal liberties are important, I don't know how you can read the New Testament in the life of Jesus and not see that our concern needs to be for others rather than for ourselves. So we can't just think for ourselves and kind of go, I'm not particularly comfortable with that, so I'm just going to do what I want. That's not a particularly biblical model. So I think we do need to be thinking of others. And I think that our participation in vaccination does create the possibility for our society to be free, right? Like if I were the one last person needed to get to 80% so that everyone could kind of get back to life, you know, I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Jab me up.
Yeah.
Right now I've already been vaccinated. So, you know, it's too late for me. Yeah. I can't be that person, but maybe you can. You know, so I think that there's that component. And we are, I think in a way serving our wider society. You know, I think that, you know, while we, you know, kind of the anti-vaccine movement, you know, say around measles or smallpox or whatever the case might be, you know, that really does rely on other people being vaccinated. Like that's the bottom line. Like if you don't want to be vaccinated in a pandemic, that's a very different discussion than I don't want to be vaccinated in a fully vaccinated population.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I guess, the levels of irresponsibility change. And we are currently in a pandemic. And so I think it's worth us, if we have no medical reasons not to be vaccinated, I don't know how we can say from a faith-based perspective, no, I shouldn't get or I will not get. Now, again, if there are legitimate medical reasons why you can't be vaccinated, again, speak to your GP. Okay, that's different. But again, all things being equal, I think that as Christians, we should be. I think it's a way for us to be, you know, to show care and concern for our wider community and, you know, be quite frank, to protect ourselves, our families, our kids, our, you know, our loved ones. You know, I think that those are important decisions for us to make. So I think that's the case.
Yeah.
Obviously there are strong opinions both ways, some of which I think we've kind of detailed along the way. So, you know, for those of you who listen, you can probably imagine, I mean, you might be one of them, you might see everything from the different perspective than that we've presented here.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. In which case you're probably going to end up on a different kind of a different endpoint than we have. But given what I believe about that's not faith or fear, given how I would read scripture, given how I understand my role as a citizen as a Christian, that you can, I hope it makes sense why I've landed where I've landed. And I think that's an important part of it. And I think that's part of what makes it so complicated, right? You know, I think that, you know, if we meet someone and they say, I'm not getting vaccinated, like there's a part of me that I'm afraid to ask. Like, I don't, like, are you going to tell me like it's the Chinese and Bill Gates and like a worldwide conspiracy? Like, are we going that direction? Are you going to tell me it's the mark of the beast? Are you going to tell me there's an underlying medical condition, which would probably be the easiest of them?
Yeah.
Or are you going to say that you follow a particular, you know, political figure? Like, I don't know where it's going to go. Mm. And so I'm a little bit anxious about asking the question. Mm. But I think understanding kind of how people view a handful of things along the way can help make sense of this is where I've landed.
Yeah.
So again, for those of you listening, you might agree, but I hope you see how I've ended up where I've ended up. I think that's probably
the bottom line. Yeah, absolutely. Listen, it is a complex conversation, and I had no intention of this kind of answering all the questions and it just making it that black and white kind of answer.
We're not that kind of doctor.
We're not that kind of doctor. And you know, the reality is that there's still so much unknown, and we are living in this in real time and figuring it out one day at a time and you know, living new experiences within this world one day at a time. But I really appreciate your candor, and I really appreciate your willingness to kind of share those views with us. I think it is helpful to see how you got to that point and kind of for you to take us on that journey is really helpful. I hope for those listening, it's maybe clarified some things and maybe it's at least led to asking some further questions of how you have ended up at your point and to consider, you know, where that journey has taken you and what that has looked like. But yeah, Mark, thanks so much for coming in and thanks for sharing with us. And
thanks, Matt. My pleasure.
All of the above. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's special edition of the Big Three podcast and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. We hope and pray that this conversation has been helpful to you as we all seek to navigate this challenging terrain. Remember to stay safe and to be kind to yourself. Join us next week as we return to the regular GBC Big Three podcast, where there's no thought too small, no question too big.